The topic of today's ASCP Lab Medicine podcast is about glucose 6 phosphate dehydrogenase deficiency, otherwise known as G6PD deficiency, and the impact of G6PD deficiency in transfusion medicine. My name is Hui Fan, and I am the transfusion medicine fellow in the joint program between the New York Blood Center and the New York Presbyterian Hospital at Columbia University. And I also have with me Dr. Richard Francis, who is an assistant professor in the Department of Pathology and Cell Biology at Columbia University. He is also the assistant director of the Special Hematology and Coagulation Lab at the New York Presbyterian Hospital at Columbia University. Dr. Francis' research interests and expertise is about G6PD and how it affects the blood supply in general, as well as the recipient of the blood products from the donors who might be G6PD deficient. So, Dr. Francis, why is the enzyme G6PD very important in humans? What role does it play in the human physiology?
Glucose-6-phosphate dehydrogenase, or G6PD, is very important because it is the first enzyme that is in the what's called the pentose phosphate pathway and is responsible for producing NADPH, which is used by cells as a reducing agent in order to detoxify reactive oxygen species, the most important of those being hydrogen peroxide. Red blood cells do not have a Krebs cycle, a citric acid cycle, and because of that, it is G6PD is the sole means by which the red cell makes NADPH. And again, the NADPH is central to detoxifying reactive oxygen species. So whether it's involved in catalase activity or promoting the activity of glutathione reductase and then subsequently glutathione peroxidase, it is central to getting rid of hydrogen peroxide.
So before we talk about how the patient manifests the disease clinically, let's talk about the epidemiology of this disease. How frequent did you encounter G6PD deficient patients? What are the prevalence of this disease around the world and in the U.S.?
So G6PD deficiency is actually the most common enzyme deficiency worldwide. It affects about 400 million people. It's believed that G6PD deficiency gives sort of a survival advantage to patients who are infected with malaria, the idea being that G6PD deficient red blood cells are less susceptible to malaria infection, and so G6PD deficiency, therefore, is found in areas where malaria is typically endemic. So the highest frequency of G6PD deficiency is found in people in places like sub-Saharan Africa, Southeast Asia, the Mediterranean, basically those regions.
So apparently G6PD deficiency is one of the very common diseases. So how does the disease transmit it? Is it a genetic disease or what is it?
Right. So it is a congenitally acquired disease. So you end up being born with it, and it's from a mutation in the G6PD gene. And the G6PD gene itself is located on the X chromosome. So it is an X-linked trait.
Okay. So apparently it will be more common in boys, correct?
Right. So typically when someone actually is symptomatic, it will be either a male patient who is going to be hemizygous, so has only one copy of the G6PD gene, and that copy is mutated. Also, though, you can find it in females who have two X's, and whether or not they present with the symptoms that you get with G6PD deficiency, hemolysis being the primary one, or red blood cell destruction in response to oxidative stress, it can depend upon whether or not there's skewed X inactivation, or in females who are heterozygous, and then females who are homozygous, so have two X chromosomes that have a mutated G6PD gene, these patients will present like males.
So if a patient has G6PD deficiency, how would the disease manifest itself? Do we see that, would they be manifest the disease without any, in the daily life, or would it be only manifest itself after a certain condition?
So it actually depends. The World Health Organization divides G6PD variants into about five different classes. And in the first class, we have people who have what's called congenital non-spherocytic hemolytic anemia. So these are patients who have less than 1% of G6PD activity and who also present with this chronic hemolysis, which is not brought on by any kind of exposure, but just simply that happens. That is pretty rare, and so the next variants are going to be class 2 variants that are going to have less than 10% of normal activity. Within that class, the so-called Mediterranean variant is the most popular one that people know about, which is the one where we have what's called favism. So people who eat fava beans end up getting an oxidative stress, end up with hemolysis. So those are the class 2. And then class 3 are going to be people who a lot of the times are going to be asymptomatic and have no problems, but when they take a certain medication like the anti-malarial drug Primaquine or are exposed to things like mothballs, if someone accidentally ingests mothballs, will have red blood cell destruction and hemolysis, which will, again, present as blood in the urine or hemoglobin in the urine and maybe feeling tired because they're anemic. Jaundice, so yellow eyes, yellow skin. Class 4 are going to be variants that have normal activity, so that really wouldn't manifest as anything. And then you have the final class, class 5, which are going to be ones where there's actually increased enzyme activity.
Oh, wow. There's different variation of this disease. Is it a glandular common deficiency of the enzyme? So how would we diagnose this disease? Do we have like good assays to diagnose this disease?
So yes, there are several tests that can be done. The standard tests are ones that are going to measure the ability of the enzyme G6PD to produce NADPH. So the first is called a fluorescent spot test, which basically the idea here is that NADPH, the reduced form, fluoresces when you hit it with a UV light, and the NADP+, the oxidized form, does not fluoresce. So you can actually just take a blood spot, you can put the necessary substrates on it, and then you can shine a Wood's lamp on it and see whether or not you get fluorescence. And that's the kind of the most basic test to see, do you get NADPH production or not? And then there are several other simple variations that you can use to look at, again, simply to look at NADPH production. The next is to do a more quantitative assay where you need a spectrophotometer that can read in the UV range at 340 nanometers. And again, you can then actually get a solid number for what the G6PD activity is by doing the quantitative test. And finally, there are genetic assays that one can do, PCR-based assays, sequencing, that you can do to detect known mutations.
So I assume that the PCR assay, you can only do it even though the patient has a hemolysis at this time. Is that correct?
Right. So what you're saying is that one of the issues with doing a screening test is that it's known that G6PD activity decreases in red cells as the red cells age. Therefore, the highest G6PD levels are found in young red cells, reticulocytes. And if someone is having a hemolytic event and has started producing reticulocytes, then you might get a falsely elevated G6PD level overall and miss that the patient is actually G6PD deficient. But if you do a molecular test, you're testing the DNA from the white blood cells, and that's not going to be affected by reticulocytosis.
Oh, that's a great review on the pathophysiology and the epidemiology and diagnosis of G6PD deficient. And so let's focus on the transfusion medicine. Do we really know the prevalence of the donors with G6PD deficient? And do we screen them for this disease? Because it's the most common, you know, enzyme deficiency in the worldwide. And how about, do we have any guidelines?
I'll start with the easiest question. In general, blood donors are not routinely screened in the United States for G6PD deficiency. The prevalence of blood donors with G6PD deficiency varies, again, depending upon what area of the world and what population you're studying. So there is some data from places around the world looking at the frequency of G6PD deficiency amongst blood donors specifically, and you find numbers that range from below, say, 1% when you look at the donor population in the United States to numbers that can be as high as 20% when you look at donors in sub-Saharan Africa, places like Nigeria. The FDA, the AABB, do not give any guidance for testing donors for G6PD deficiency. However, the World Health Organization, in one of their bulletins, does actually give some guidance about testing donors for G6PD deficiency. And basically the way that they stated is that if you know that within your donor populations there's a high prevalence of red cell enzyme defects like G6PD deficiency, then you should have some way of screening this population for G6PD deficiency and knowing, A, whether or not the individuals are G6PD deficient, and then B, whether or not the person who is G6PD deficient has actually had a hemolytic event. So the WHO addresses it, but as far as I know, that's the only sort of body that addresses this.
I guess the WHO addresses very vaguely. So what is the common practice of the blood centers in the U.S., let's say?
So in the U.S., the common practice is to not screen for G6PD deficiency, whether it be on a questionnaire or certainly there's no laboratory testing that's done routinely. However, blood centers actually do differ on whether or not they will accept donors who are G6PD deficient. So it's not clear, you know, there's no defined policy, and that would probably be a good thing to have.
So you know that the red cell is stored in this additive solution for up to 42 days, according to the FDA. And so does the level of G6PD enzyme change throughout storage?
There's conflicting data as to whether or not that happens. So studies have been done over the years looking at red cell products that have been stored in various preservative solutions, and some report that the activity does not change over the storage period, and there are other studies that show that the activity actually does increase something maybe around 10, 20, 30%. So, but again, there's data to show both.
And are those changes within the variation of the assay, or are they more than the assay variation?
So basically, these are going to be quantitative assays, and so it's just not clear whether it's related to the storage solution, whether it's related to the population of donors. It's just not clear.
Okay. I know that, as you said before, if the patient has G6PD deficient, the patient might manifest as having hemolytic anemia after certain medication or certain food. So let's say that we have a patient, you know, regular patient in the hospital who is not G6PD deficient, but who happened to receive a unit of red cell that it comes from a G6PD deficient donor, because, you know, we don't test for that for that purpose. So is it known that would this patient get hemolysis?
So it's not known that any given patient will actually have hemolysis if given a unit of blood that is G6PD deficient. But there are many case reports where patients received transfusion and had hemolysis that was unexplained, and that the only explanation that was found after doing, you know, pretty rigorous workup was that the red cells were actually G6PD deficient. But we do not know, you know, which patient is going to actually have hemolysis if they get a G6PD deficient unit. There were studies from maybe back in the 60s and 50s where patients were, normal individuals were given transfusions of G6PD deficient blood and then treated with medications that are known to cause hemolysis in G6PD deficient patients. One example is nitrofurantoin, and these patients had a pretty impressive hemolysis, so had hemoglobin in their urine and did not get an adequate rise in the hemoglobin. So we do know that if someone is taking a medication that can cause hemolysis in a G6PD deficient person, that if they get red cells that are G6PD deficient, they can have hemolysis. And again, that there are various case reports where there's been unexplained hemolysis, and the only thing that can be tied to it is that the red cells were G6PD deficient.
Is there a certain level of G6PD enzyme that you need and not causing hemolysis, or is it just very, is there all day no correlation between the level of enzyme and the symptoms?
Yeah, it's very tough. So even in G6PD deficient patients, it's difficult to predict who's going to have hemolysis based upon their activity levels. So, you know, G6PD is highly regulated in vivo, and the idea is that there's probably some aspects of how it works in vivo that we don't actually capture with our in vitro testing. So it's not clear exactly the correlation between the activity levels and who's going to have hemolysis.
Oh, okay. That is very interesting. And I know that your research focus is about G6PD and transfusion medicine. So let's say that you already told us that G6PD is more prevalent in certain populations. And then let's say that you said it's more prevalent in the area with malaria. So, and then those also, you know, sickle cell can also be more prevalent in the area with malaria. So, and we also, and in this patient, they tend to have sickle cell disease, and we give them, you know, red cell transfusion, either simple transfusion or exchange transfusion. And the usual practice, even though it's vary between institutions, is that we partially match for the antigen. Let's say you match them for RH and CAL, that is the common practice. Just by probability and chance, these patients will more likely to be receiving the units that come from this PD donor because of the same ethnicity. Any evidence for that to happen, or do we just suspect that based on mathematical consideration? And what should we do in this scenario?
So we were interested in this, in the idea of knowing that patients with certain hematological disorders like thalassemia or sickle cell disease who are chronically transfused, we try to decrease their risk of alloimmunization by, yes, matching for various red cell antigens. And by doing this, we believe that we sort of select for donors of a certain ethnicity. So in the case of sickle cell disease patients, we actually did a study to look at the frequency of G6PD deficiency in red cell units just from the general inventory from our hospital transfusion service, and then looking at the G6PD activity and the frequency of G6PD deficiency among red cells that would be set aside for a sickle cell patient. So ones that are phenotypically matched and because of this phenotype matching are more likely to come from donors of African descent. And we found that there was actually a significant difference in the rate of G6PD deficiency. So whereas in the general inventory, we found that the frequency of G6PD deficiency was about 0.3%. In the antigen-matched inventory that we expect to come more often from donors of African descent, it was actually 12.3% was the rate of deficiency, and this was a very significant increase compared to the general inventory. As far as what we should do in this scenario, what we feel that, you know, there's some historic evidence that G6PD-deficient red blood cells do not withstand storage as well as normal red blood cells, and so when they're transfused, might actually have a decreased survival. But these studies were done when red cell storage was sort of a bit different, and so we would like to know if this is still the case under current storage conditions, so current preservative solutions, et cetera. So we think that there needs to be more studies that are done right now looking at what the effect of G6PD deficiency is on red cell storage, and depending on what that data shows, then come up with a policy for what should be done.
Dr. Francis, so it seems that G6PD deficiency is, you know, at the very common disease, and yet there are still many things unknown about this disease, as well as the risk of this disease in transfusion medicine from both the recipient as well as the screening the donor unit for that. And you give us a lot of good information throughout the podcast. Can you summarize it in the take-home point, in a few take-home points for the listener, and provide some opinions regarding the future research direction if someone would try to take the challenge in this aspect?
Sure. So basically, first of all, just to recap, G6PD deficiency majorly affects the red blood cells, and it manifests as, you know, red blood cell destruction when there is oxidative stress. As far as the relationship to transfusion medicine, red blood cell storage, putting these red blood cells after collection into the refrigerator for the 42 days, is itself seen as an oxidative stress. So there's data to show that during the red cell storage period, there is an increase in oxidative stress markers and that the red cells themselves seem to become in some way a bit less able to handle oxidative stress. And so therefore, the idea comes up that, well, G6PD deficient red blood cells probably may withstand storage more poorly and therefore may be cleared or not survive as long after transfusion as normal red blood cells. And again, there is some older evidence to suggest that that is the case. At the same time, we are not currently screening for G6PD deficiency, and we know that these units are definitely in the inventory because we found them quite frequently in a subset of our inventory. So therefore, we have this sort of disconnect where we know that there is a possible risk, we know that the units are there, but it's difficult to assess exactly how often this is a problem and who should we maybe be screening or not screening. So I think that one of the important things is going to be studies that look at the red cell survival of G6PD deficient red blood cells after transfusion to determine that, you know, this still is a problem. And then we should probably also look into following the WHO regulations, which says that when you know that you're getting red cells from a donor population that has a high prevalence of G6PD deficiency. For example, donors of African descent who are donating red cells to sickle cell patients have some way of determining whether or not these donors are G6PD deficient and asking questions to see, you know, have they had hemolysis or not, and then deciding whether or not you can come up with a comprehensive policy for protecting the recipients.
Thank you, Dr. Francis, for taking your time to talk with us and our listeners from the podcast about G6PD deficiency and the unknown risks that we have to face in transfusion medicine.
Thank you, Wei.
Thank you.